This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Gunnison with Lynn Mark and Noah Lim in the studio this morning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking with Kia Jiao, co-deputy chair of the Bar Council for Environment and Climate Change Committee on the Environment Quality Act. But before that, we're taking a look at markets.
Right, so looking at the U.S. markets, Dow up 0.2%, S&P 500 up 0.4%, NASDAQ grades showing up 1%.
Asian markets, there we go.
Sorry, Lynn, don't want to talk to us this morning.
It wasn't my fault, anyway. Asian markets looked pretty mixed. The Nikkei was marginally in the red. The Hang Seng was up 1.2%. The Shanghai Composite was also up 0.08%. Singapore's SDI, not too great. That lost some ground, down 0.3%, while we were just marginally in the green, up 0.1%.
Yep, and right now, though, we're going to take a look at more on international markets with Tim Mulholland, president at TGM Limited out of Chicago. Tim, thanks for joining us this morning. Now, Jamie Dimon thinks this U.S. boom could last till 2023, but the equity valuations are, let's just say, quite high. Do you hold a similar opinion, or are you more circumspect about this bullish cycle we're seeing?
Well, I agree with him in the bullish cycle. I'm not sure about the duration, because it'll depend on inflation, if it's transitory or not, in which case the scenario, could change drastically. But for right now, it looks as though we are going to see a boom. We don't really know about inflation, but I do caution equities don't typically do so well in boom times. They do their best in bad times, as we've seen throughout history. So when you start getting the boom, that's when it's time when the market tops out. So at least historically.
Recent FOMC minutes indicate that U.S. rates will remain low and that markets will be awash in liquidity for a while. In this scenario, where should investors look for optimum returns?
Yeah, likely this keeps prices bid because you don't have the inflation. They're playing it down as transitory. They have the tools, so forth and so on. So the market looks at this liquidity until it doesn't anymore. So I think it's the liquidity and rate-driven rally. When you look at it for what I believe long-term rates are going, I don't think that's really that bullish. And let's face it, if the Fed needs to do something, they're certainly going to have to reduce their balance sheet if they're going to fight inflation as a tool and raise rates and cut liquidity.
Now, taking a look at Janet Yellen's tax roadmap, if implemented, it could likely bite into the profits of some of the fangs. What will happen to big tech like Apple and Google should this proposal go through?
Well, I think the market's so in love and infatuated and, with these companies that have produced so much wealth. They might not notice right away, but when you take a look at the after-tax free cash flows, which we use for, valuations, then it will matter, especially if long-term rates rise, because you're going to have that lower after-tax free cash flow along with higher rates. I mean, assuming we get higher rates, I could be wrong. But if we do, then I think they reprice, and they reprice lower.
Right. And when we take a look at retail stocks as the economy opens, Tim, the analysts seem to be bullish on them. At the same time, though, massive store closures are expected as a result of the pandemic and shift to e-commerce. Are you on a net basis here? Are you bullish or bearish on this sector? Because it is kind of a complicated situation.
Oh, it's one that was just involved in a discussion the other day with a turnaround management association that I belong to. And, it's an interesting because there's a good case for some retail outlets, especially big box, but smaller outfits, I think they're going to be in trouble, and unless they continue to really make some inroads into the e-commerce, and it depends on their product availability, accessibility, et cetera. But, one thing is for certain that gives them a fighting chance, perhaps, is that their leases will be a lot cheaper.
Tim, one more question here, though. On the back of the Archegos blow-up, if you will, we would call it that, the Credit Suisse looks to be tightening their financing terms. It gives hedge funds and family offices. It looks like they're putting in new practices, right, industry practices at this point. And they have lost, I think, some at this point, about $4.7 billion in terms of on their income and bank balance sheets. When you look at the financial, what are the potential implications to the financial industry from the Archegos saga, from your perspective?
I think a lot of it's kind of isolated. Like, I don't think some of the financials that I particularly like, which are the, U.S. Banks, money center banks, especially like Bank of America, But, you know, it's hard to say. I think some of the bank, like Credit Suisse, I think was an outlier in this one. I think Nomura also had some. But for I think the U.S. bank investment banks have been pretty much unscathed. I think this will pass. However, there's a lot of leverage in the system. And you look at margin debt these days and so forth. And, you know, just wonder about the risk management practices. So they're kind of like letting the closing the barn door after the cow got out, you know, with Credit Suisse. But at least, you know, if you see, you know, maybe a little bit more tightening of regulatory, but it's all risk management. And I am very surprised that their risk management tools failed them.
And when we talk about the financial sector, investment banks like Goldman are up like 80% on a 12-month basis. Tim, how do you think the financial sector rally still has legs here? Because some of them seem to be a little expensive for financials. What is your general outlook on this industry?
But look at Goldman and its Marcus and its Apple Pay. I mean, it's more like a bank, real bank. That's a different story and some growth. But I think with the yield curve steepening and net interest margins, which incidentally were supported by PPP, which is not really that good. So hopefully they could start making some different type of loans, new loans, and get their net interest margins up. Hey, maybe some infrastructure lending or so forth. But, you know, banks don't have, I think the real thing is the write-downs they took, I think, were way too conservative. So they're going to have some write-ups, I think, coming up here. So I still like the sector a lot because given my scenario, bullish, higher rates, I got to like financials.
Tim, always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your time. That was Tim Mulholland, president at TGM Limited out of Chicago, giving us towards the end of that a little bit of a look into the financial sector, of the opinion that the Archegos saga could be limited to the particular banks involved. But we are seeing some news out of Credit Suisse, though.
Yeah, so looking at what they are going to be doing, they are tightening the financing terms it gives hedge funds and family offices. This is an indication of potential new industry practices after that blow up, which cost the Swiss bank $4.7 billion. And yes, so Credit Suisse now have put some has forced out several executives over the scandal, including the head of its investment bank and head of risk.
Credit Suisse is on the currently worth $24 billion on its market capitalization. So $5 billion is a lot of money.
So Credit Suisse has been calling on clients to change margin requirements in swap agreements so that they match the more restrictive terms of its prime brokerage agreements. It looks like it's shifting from static margining to dynamic margining, which may also force clients to post more collateral and could reduce the profitability of some trades. So if we set static margining sets a fixed amount of collateral that a client has to post in order to maintain a certain size of a position or an account.
Yeah, and on the flip side, dynamic margining, a dealer can require more collateral if the underlying risk of the position or account increases due to factors such as volatility or concentration. Essentially, one is fixed and the other one's a bit more variable in nature.
Yeah, the irony of this is when I read the story, actually Credit Suisse was initially not so keen, right, to get involved in this deal. And now found itself on the wrong side of the fence.
Speaking of deals, let's take a look at SoftBank, because through its Vision Fund 2, it's joining forces to fund the expansion of Oda. What's Oda? Well, Norway's largest online grocery business. Today you learned that. they're doing so in a partnership with technology investor Process NV in a move which could value Oda at around $900 million, just shy of becoming a unicorn.
So both investors, SoftBank as well as Prosus, are forking out about 100 million euros each, while the existing owners, Kinnevik AB, is paying out 20 million euros and supermarket chain Rima is forking out 3 million euros. So this combined 223 million euros is going to be used to finance an expansion of Oda into Finland and Germany. So Oda says that its strengths include like a personalized shopping experience, highly automated fulfillment with a 3 times better efficiency than store picking. So it plans to launch in Finland in the fourth quarter. It's aiming to reach about 70% of the population from Helsinki. And so it's currently building a fulfillment center out to provide for that. And of course, Germany's expansion will also take place next year. All major cities under consideration.
Yeah, very interesting. So the company generated roughly 200 million euros in revenue last year with a very small loss. So this year it has positive earnings before interest each month. So the investment comes on top of about 100 million euros that he had raised previously.
So now let's just quickly turn over to another story, and we have to talk about, because it's a SPAC-related story. Anything with SPACs has to be covered nowadays. Airport concession operator OTG is exploring options which could include a sale or going public through a SPAC. Sounds like an oddly familiar story. We heard yesterday that Grab was going through a SPAC as well to get itself listed in New York.
Yes, and we spoke about it with Varun Mittal, global emerging markets fintech leader over at EY. So that was a very interesting conversation looking at SPACs, you know, listing via a SPAC versus your traditional IPO, whether or not that would affect the valuations of particular companies. You can find that on the BFM app or on Spotify under the title Fast Route to Listing.
Yep, so OTG is working with an advisor to solicit interest from potential suitors, including private equity funds, so-called strategics and SPACs. Its target valuation couldn't be immediately learned by Bloomberg, but OTG did file to go public in 2016 before delaying plans, citing market conditions. Their company has locations in Chicago's O'Hare International, New York's JFK and LaGuardia, as well as Toronto Pearson International Airport, among others. Right now, though, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, a look at the Environment Quality Act. Keep it here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.